We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I don't have dates with this whole Harbaugh firing thing, and people are asking me if I'm going to spring training. I thought we'd be playing the Texans on Monday night, for all I know. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away. Excuse me, candy cane cash scratch-offs to give away from the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at GBMC helping keep me alive back in 2025 so that I can enjoy Oriole baseball in 2026. We've done a lot of chatter around here about John Harbaugh and the next coach of the Ravens, but I want to get a little baseball in here. And it's been a week when, after the Ravens got eliminated, I didn't know we would be firing coaches around here, but this guy was around every time Billy Martin got fired and got rehired again, as well as Bob Lemon and probably just all sorts of people back in the day. Barry Bloom has covered baseball my dad got the Baseball Digest, and I used to read Barry Bloom's work. He's out in Phoenix, Arizona. He is our defending champion for all things baseball. And Barry, I've been trying to get you on for 5 or 6 weeks, probably before any of this started, to say, hey, how do you think the Orioles are going to do in the offseason? And at any point, I can bring any of my baseball people in here and say, well, how are they doing? And I'll be honest with you, man, I've known you a long time. I've been doing this 34 years. There haven't been a whole lot of times, like on Elvis's birthday, which is where we are right now, first week of January, that the Orioles have been involved in anything during the Angelos era that looked like a good off season, maybe going back to 97 or 98.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in comparison to other teams in the division, sans the Blue Jays, they're probably having a decent offseason because they've signed some people, and hopefully the guys who were in the tank last year and multiple injuries, they'll be okay coming into this season. You know, they're with their payroll. I mean, they're up against it, against the Yankees, Red Sox, and, Blue Jays. I mean, those guys spend about $1 billion in payroll between the three of them, and the Orioles are just not going to get there. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if anything changes revenue-wise and attendance-wise with the work they're going to be doing or are doing on Orioles Park at this point. So, you know, they and the Rays are in a separate division from the other three teams.
This is why I bring people like you on. I told Joe Poyley earlier, I only want to talk to people that know more than me. And, like, you've already started the hall party with the real story, which is, if y'all are going to be successful, you're going to have to create revenue. And Eric Geddy and Rubenstein know that. Angelos never seemed to care much because the revenue was just falling off a tree from Masson after he went broke before Masson and Washington put the team there. But Angelos said something to me. He said a lot of things. He lied a lot. I mean, I go back to the tape and how much he said that was true or untrue was almost like a Trump press conference to some degree. But the element of truth was he compared Washington baseball to what would happen with the A's and the Giants. And this is before the Giants had just hired John Miller at that point. So they hadn't won anything at that point. And they were just about to get into the Barry Bonds business at that point in the mid-90s. And Angelo said, if DC gets a team, it's going to fracture this, and it's going to make Baltimore a small market, Barry. And we don't want the Orioles to be a small market. And, you know, your lead story is that the Orioles are a small market team, and that's what Rubenstein and Eric Geddy bought. And that's what they're up against in the modern baseball, as well as the work stoppage that may be coming next year that may fix that, right? Like, the whole idea of the work stoppage would be like, fix it so it's normal, like football or normal payroll. But baseball would never have a part of that. And this is why Steve Bisciotti would say to me many years ago that he didn't want to be involved in baseball because he didn't think it was a fair fight.
Well, first of all, who's to say that what the NFL does is real payroll, and what they do to the players, most of the players, is pretty unconscionable. I mean, their PA has allowed over the course of the years, because of a few strikes that were broken by players, substitution players, that they cracked that union, and basically that most players in football can be released without pay. They don't have guaranteed contracts. You can get injured during the course of the season and be released by your team and lose your health care at a certain point too. So I mean, basically what you have in football is a graduated reserve clause, which was legislated out of Major League Baseball in the 70s, first starting with the Curt Flood decision, which he lost, but it was still a predecessor to, Messersmith, and the arbitration decision that the reserve clause was illegal, that you couldn't use it as a way to shackle your player to a team endlessly, because when those guys sat out a season without a contract and played for the team, they were no longer bound to the team after that one season. And it took a guy like Marvin Miller to figure that out. And that's why baseball is where it is. And people who don't have a context of where the union has gone since the 1970s and where they are today don't realize the history of it and why there's not going to be a salary cap and a floor, and that the owners can lock the players out for ad infinitum. But that union is well invested. It has plenty of money, and they can withstand a long lockout from the owners. And on the other side of it, my contention is that the owners are not going to miss games, and they're not going to lock out the players. It's going to be very much like the last time. It'll be an off-season lockout where it doesn't cost them any money. But if you think that the Dodgers, who last year cracked the $1 billion mark in local revenue for the first time and drew over 4 million people for the first time, if you think they're going to miss any games because they're worried about it being equitable for the Orioles to compete, Guggenheim baseball, that's not happening. And George and Hal Steinbrenner can say whatever he wants publicly, but in his heart of hearts, I don't think the Yankees care one whit if the Orioles are competitive, and I bet they don't want them to be competitive. So when push comes to shove and games are starting to be lost, including television revenue, the owners are, like they always do, are going to kowtow, and this will all continue the way it is. And we've had multiple proof in Major League Baseball that teams, if they spend their money wisely, can compete. You have an entire division in the American League in the Central that, yeah, they play each other. Yeah, they've got a better draw. But hell, they all have payrolls under 200 million. They all make the playoffs, either not every year, but alternately every year. And they're all a thorn in the side because of the big market teams, because once you get to the playoffs, there's no saying that one team with a lower ranking payroll wise is not going to be able to beat a bigger team with a bigger payroll. And look at the Dodgers last year. They had to come down to the last play of the season with their $400 million payroll for tax purposes to win the World Series when everybody was ceding it to them when the season started. There are too many variables in baseball. And if you just spend your money the right way, you can compete in a 12-team playoff format.
Bloom is our guest. He's covered Major League Baseball for many, many years. What are you doing? You're writing, working on a Padre book, right? And who are you working for? Give me the whole, I always think the Associated Press, because that's where I sort of associate you with, you know.
Well, I was always just a freelancer. When I covered the Padres for the San Diego Tribune, the Union Tribune later when it merged. I always freelanced for AP, and I freelanced for AP when I broke in the Bay Area covering the Warriors and the A's and the Giants. So, but I never actually worked for AP. So, my thing is Tribune, Union Tribune, Bloomberg, MLB.com for 16 years, Forbes. I locked up with them after I left MLB. Then a friend of mine who was creating Sportico came and got me to found Sportico about 5.5 years ago. And there was some shuffling around in the Penske Media Company recently. And I chose not to move to New York. I went just back to Forbes. So I'm a contributing writer for Forbes. I have a Substack column for my non-baseball stuff. And I've been writing a book on the 1984 Padres with Ballard Smith, the club president at the time, since, for years. And now it's coming down to push to shove. I've got to get it done by April so I can get published next year. And
Well,
if
I
I
hope
don't,
Manny Machado reads it for you. Hope all of them read it, Padres guys.
Manny Machado read? I'm not sure about
Oh,
that.
well, you'll find out. English, Spanish, I'm not sure. Barry Bloom writes in English, and I think he thinks in baseball. You gave me a little Lords of the Realm flashback there from 34 years ago. I was on the air in 94 during the strike time, and in a baseball only city at that time. We did not have the Ravens at that time. There wasn't any prayer we're going to have the Ravens at the time. Angelos took the side of the players instead of the owners. So I'm well versed. I've had Marvin Miller on the show, and I've had all the Faye Vincents of the world that were in the middle of a lot of that stuff back in the day. And also Angelos, who was worried about it. You mentioned media and television revenue and money. And my great question that if I've only talked to Roger or not Roger Goodell, excuse me, that's Freudian, Rob Manfred once in my life. It was the day he was approved at the Hyatt in Baltimore as the commissioner of Major League Baseball. He was voted on here and commissioned here, and he was literally in the sundry shop at the Hyatt, and I spoke to him briefly. If I ever ran into him again, I would talk to him about what he really thinks the future of revenue is for Major League Baseball, because I have not met anyone, and I'm going to have breakfast with Katie Griggs tomorrow at an event here in Baltimore. He's now running the Orioles, that can explain to me, really explain to me, what the revenue model looks like for having the games on my phone, for having the Birdland discount thing we do here, for having tickets, getting a bobblehead, doing the things that you would want a fan to do, having a credit card, having an affinity, this or that. But like, I don't understand. I know their old model because I've been doing this for 4 decades. The old model was we're going to sell tickets and maybe some beer. And then it was we're going to sell some names on the wall. We're going to sell some sponsors. And then we're going to get a new stadium and we're going to just bilk everybody for these club level. And we're going to charge more for the beer. And then we're going to get a television network. Television network's going to save us. It's going to be the YES Network, the NESN, MASN. That's going to save. And that sustained Angelos. Made Angelos billions of dollars while the team just sucked and sucked the life out of the city and took money from cable subscribers who didn't know they were giving $3.20 a sub to Home Team Sports or Masson or YES Network or any of that. That model's blown up with cable television. He knows that. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. What I have not figured out is, other than charging more for your beer and more for your tickets and getting people back to the ballpark, how you're getting people from Apple TV on Friday to land work on Fox on Saturday to ESPN on Sunday, and I'm going to have all of these things. Like, I don't understand their business model, Barry. And my partner, who covers the Orioles, lives in southern Pennsylvania and sometimes has the Orioles blacked out 55 miles from where he lives on the local app thing, which the Angelos family could never figure out. They were the last ones, kind of like the Padres, the last ones to kind of like have HGTV as an example. And I don't know where the investment is, and I don't know where the mind frame is. And when I talk to really smart business media people, when I bring your pal Eric Fisher on, when I bring John Aranda, when I bring business people on, nobody can explain to me. When I talk to baseball people, like, where's the model that not just the Dodgers and Yankees can eat on? Where's the model that the Rockies are going to eat on, or the Orioles, or the Pirates, or the Royals? Because it used to be like cable television. It's like water. It's like a utility. It's like the mafia. You're going to pay them every month just because you got cable TV. We're not going to know it, and it's just going to add up to a lot of money. And it did for John and Peter Angelos and that family, who never really managed the network well. They didn't put news. They didn't put any programming on it that made the network anything other than just a cash suck for the baseball team. I don't understand their business model, and that's why I really want to get educated on that between now and whenever the work stoppage or fight, because there's going to be a huge fight over money next year, and I don't even understand where the money's coming from, Barry.
Well, I think when you talk, have your lunch with Katie Griggs, who I like a lot. She's an accolade of Derek Hall out here in Arizona, and she's very sharp. And the money comes from all different places, and really there is no one size fit all in baseball. It really is a, as far as local revenue is concerned, it's really adjudicated by the market itself and what
You're
you
on
can,
your own, basically.
yeah, what you can do in the market.
Right.
And as far as television is concerned, it's just simplifying it at this point. It comes down to that the old local television paradigm, as you just adroitly pointed out, is really broken down. So you have teams now, maybe six or seven of them, including the Diamondbacks and the Padres and the Twins. They don't have their any sort of regional baseball network, either that they own or is existing there, that is paying them X amount of dollars a year to buy their product. So they're in a
And you
sense.
also can't put a sales team together to put them out to create revenue because you don't have any certainty, right? Like literally.
That's not true. You can put a sales team out there, and what you do, what they're doing now is they're selling their own subs, and they're bypassing the actual cable network.
So where am I watching a Twins game if I'm in Minnesota on the app?
No, you're also watching it. They sell it. They sell it to local TV too.
So
It's
channel 2 or 6 or 8 or whatever will have the games there because they don't have a Northwest Sports, Fox Sports regional route massing thing, right?
Look, the Suns right now opted to put all their games on local TV for free. They don't have a TV model where anybody's paying them to broadcast their games. And the Diamondbacks, who were much may at one time was making $60 million, average fee from Fox, who turned into Diamond, who turned into Bally, as all of these things came apart and crumbled, and they all went into bankruptcy because of it.
Barry, the guy that owns all of it is 4 miles from where I'm
Staten
sitting
Island.
here right now. The Sinclair guys, right? Like literally, they're 4 miles away. The Smith boys. They were
They
the
don't.
ones at the end of the day who came in who
No.
thought they were going to rescue it because they had television channels to put it on and they
Yeah,
couldn't
no.
figure it out either.
They don't own all of it, and that's the problem. You have a number of teams that own their own television networks, like Masson, like Yes, like Dodgers, like the Giants. You have all these teams that have their own regional sports networks that either they have a hand in or a part in, and then they play the game of taking a rights fee from networks that they own and incorporating into their baseball operating expenses and revenue. So what, getting it down to the simplest explanation is what Manfred wants to do on his way out, and what a lot of these smaller market teams want to do is they want to revenue share all that money between all 30 teams, just like they did when they started MLB.com and MLB TV back in 2000. Now, there were teams that didn't want to do that, but since it takes 75% in baseball to pass anything, there wasn't enough opposition at that time from the Dodgers, White Sox, Cubs, Yankees to block it. And so when that started and they started investing money in that, they wound up sharing it. And it turned out to be a huge boon business with spin-offs and sell-offs. And over the course of time, their original $2 million per team investment turned into billions of dollars.
You have a BAM, right? Is that right?
So what's happened since then is now they're going to start spinning off MLB TV and those baseball games that were always controlled by MLB. They're now starting to spin it off to ESPN and others who are going to control those networks. And what they want to do is they want that paradigm, the 30, split evenly among all the teams to take place. But the problem is, You have, I can give you 10 markets off the top of my head that are not going to do this. And so any vote among the owners is going to be squelched by those 10 teams. And
Kind of
again,
like impeaching Trump, right? Yeah, kind of like that.
I kind of like what I was just explaining to you about the lockout. Those teams with the high revenue are going to keep the, are not going to vote in favor. They don't care about the Minnesota Twins. The Baltimore now, who's got Masson on their own because the Nationals are opting out of Masson. They don't want to be part of it
Well,
anymore.
you've just gotten to the root of the problem. They don't care about each other, so then they don't care about the entity. They're
Oh,
like
but
literally, right? Like, then that therein lies a
yeah,
problem.
but it's not a problem because what you don't you forget that this is they are competitors, even though they are under the umbrella of the whole of a sports league, just like the NFL or NBA or NHL or soccer or whatever. They are all in competition with each other to win, and they don't want to give any franchise any chance to win that they don't have to give them. So it's not that they're in an argument with each other. It's just the model is, on one hand, since you're a closed market with 30 teams, you're still 30 different independent businesses are all in competition with each other. And because you built these systems that have to that you have to use to vote to pass anything, they favor the majority, they don't favor the minority. It's just really that simple. And that's where baseball is. And I go back to 2002 when I was covering this stuff for MLB for BAM, and they were talking about initially revenue sharing money among the teams. And they went to the union and, they asked their help for it, or they were trying again. That was that era is we need a salary cap. And the union under Don Fehr at the time said to them, that's your problem. You have to negotiate that among your owners. And then when you come up with something, come back to us and we'll talk about it and collectively
Yeah,
bargain.
there's plenty of money there. You guys got to have to figure that out, right? Literally. That's the.
That's what they did. And they came up with the platform right now where I think it's off the top of my head, but I think 32.5% of all revenue is shared. And so the problem is there is plenty of rules on the book that teams that get $50 to $70 million in revenue sharing every year are supposed to be putting that into their rosters, into their ballpark, into their minor league
And the Orioles
system.
began a season with a $38 million payroll a couple of years ago when they're
And they
already getting
don't.
75 for waking up, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they don't. They chuck it against the off against the bottom line, and then the union looks at it and goes, "You want us to put a salary cap and a floor in to control what you're doing?" This has been a time-honored argument over the course of 50 years of labor problems and negotiations in baseball. And until, and I've talked to Scott Burrows about this, who's, really the top agent in the game and brilliant. And he
And was
knows.
in town a couple weeks ago for the first time in a long time with Pete Alonso because Angelos wouldn't deal with him for years and years and years.
A lot of owners wouldn't deal with John Moores when he was out in San Diego after a while, didn't want to deal with him anymore. But I mean, the point is that if you want his players, you have to deal with them. And then the Orioles stepped up and, and signed Pete. And so what Burrows knows that, and we've had this discussion, that baseball, MLB, their labor negotiating committee, among those lawyers who run the league, they've got to sit down and come up with a plan of how they can present a salary cap to the union that tells them it's better for all the players if you have a salary cap than it is for the few that make all the money. Now you're going to continue to make a lot of money for only a small amount of players, but it's not going to be distributed around the rest of your players. And they've got to come up with a cogent plan for that and an argument for that and prove to the players that it's true. And open up all the books to prove it to them. And if you do that, then you might have a course of conversation on this. But as of now, if the owners don't go in and negotiate among themselves this television issue, much like revenue sharing decades ago, before the next collective bargaining agreement, they are dead in the water on a salary cap or a floor with the union.
Well,
And so it's.
you mentioned the NFL in the beginning. They got together generations ago and created a different system that benefited them, still benefits them. I'm in full agreement with you after, seeing these football players with CTE
Hey,
and
look,
seeing all
and
the issues they have. It is disgraceful,
yeah,
Bisciotti's made $2 billion since the last time he's had a press conference off the football team.
okay,
Seriously.
but the what they did, and if you compare the two, back in the 1960s under Pete Rozelle, he convinced the NFL back then to turn all the television, national television negotiations and dollars over to the league. And they did, and then they split that evenly. So it's like, and it, but in football, it's a good idea because you don't have that many games, and most of them could be sold nationally. There's no local television in football except for preseason, if that. In baseball, what they could have done in the early 1960s is Major League Baseball for a million or two, when you had 16 teams, could have paid that money to buy the local television markets of each of those teams. And I can tell you, except for a few outstanding, they would have, Major League Baseball would have jumped at it, and they would have had the rights to the local television dollars for time immemorial, just like the NFL does. And if you look at the history of networks and owning teams, you have CBS, who owned the Yankees in the 1960s, selling that team to Steinbrenner for $10 million. Can you imagine if CBS had held that team and what rights they would have now? You had Fox owning the Dodgers wedged in between O'Malley, McCourt, Mark Walter, and they wanted to get out of the business. So they sold the team to McCourt for like $165 million. They then, a few years later, when McCourt had to get out, and sold the team to Guggenheim for $2.15 billion, they went out and they bid for the television rights for the Dodgers, which ultimately went for $7 billion. So we'll get, let me ask, see, I don't understand the optics of it. Just like you don't understand some of the things that you've seen. That in itself, to me, you sold those rights for time immemorial for $165 million. Now you're back at it a decade later, trying to buy those same rights for $7 billion. How stupid is management in all these businesses that this is what they do? This is where we are, Nestor. And what this is what we're looking at right now in baseball is the product of all this. But it baseball made $2 billion. They cracked $2 billion last year in local marketing and merchandising, I think for the first time. There is plenty of money in baseball to go around. And just like I said to you, the your baseball ops and your business ops, which irrevocably have to work together. And this is what you're seeing now in the Orioles for the first time. And you can dredge up a dead horse with Angelos all you want, but that's gone. And in this current organization, I was pretty impressed when I
This
came with.
offseason is really, you're right about, I would not have said that 6 months ago when they're in last place and the
But
owner's
what.
making a bobblehead of himself, right? So, but this last 90 days has
It's not.
reinvigorated
But
what.
it's not 90 days. I was in there in the middle of last summer. I came to Baltimore for 3 days. I talked to Elias, I talked to Griggs, I talked to the manager, I talked to everybody I could, and I wrote a huge story about the Orioles and where they were going, why they had the problems, but how everything was positive. I mean, they have they Major League teams would kill for what they have. They have the state of Maryland as a piggy bank to rebuild their ballpark. They pay taxes on it, but they pay no rental fee, and they have no responsibility to maintain or run that ballpark. And that's what gives them a heads up against the an edge up against the Yankees, Blue Jays, and Boston in their own division, because those three teams, they have enormous expenses on running their own ballpark. Enormous. The Yankees, $75 billion a year just in a nut to pay the city back on the bonds that they floated to build the stadium for 30 years.
Yeah, I come
And
up there
that's
and everything's expensive and it's nice and it's shiny, but I'm not thinking about who's really paying for it other than the fans, because I always feel that way when I'm buying $18 beers and $15 Knishes when I'm at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. But I don't know every structure. I only know the structure here. And I know here it's pretty good business to be Steve Bisciotti. It's pretty good business that certainly was a great. You hate when I bring up Angelos, but like his ghost is still very much here in the damage that was done. And his kids
Okay, but
hit a
that's
walk-off grand slam, literally, with the amount of money they rolled out of here with versus what the community gave to them and the lack of joy we had out of this. And these guys are up against that, whether they want to admit it or not. It's the first thing I said to Rubinstein when I met him. I'm like, it's been a lot of trauma here, dude. That's what your upper deck and the empty seats are about for playoff games, because it's not that people don't love the Orioles, they'll trust the Orioles. And this offseason, and bringing Pete Alonso in, who seems like a good guy, and he, like, they
work.
haven't had a press conference like that around here in a long time, dude. 150 million. Like, it's almost like they're really in Major League Baseball. All the stuff we've been watching on the outside where other teams sign players and we sit and there is no offseason here the last 30 years where anybody, they really were going to bring Mark Teixeira home. They were always in on it, but Angelos would say, I gave him Messina too much money. People here don't forget that, but they're also
All
not
right.
going to forget that
Look,
these
cut the
new
shit
guys,
on Angelos.
what's that?
I cut the shit on Angelos. Who gives a damn? That's over. Now you're in a
Understood.
situation
And that's
where
why this is important.
you are going to have, and I you have a symbiosis between the business side and the baseball side of the Orioles that in 5 years, people and another generation who didn't grow up under Angelos and don't aren't affected by it like you are not going to be
It's
worrying
not
about
that I'm affected by it, it's that
it. Yeah,
people
you
I
are
know
affected.
don't give them money.
Oh,
I
you.
spoke to a group.
That's stupid because you're not giving Angelos any money anymore.
No, it's
You're
not about Angelos.
giving
It's about the Orioles and being out of the loop. I gave a speech about a month ago to an
Didn't they?
Italian.
Wait a second. Didn't they win the division 2 years ago?
But they're not
They had
selling
a
tickets
bad.
here. They're
They
not
had a bad.
selling enthusiasm here. The owner of the football team just fired the coach because, like, enthusiasm's down for both of the teams. Now, the baseball team, as we sit here this morning with the kick going wide right the other night, it's now baseball season. And as
Look,
we look
Lester,
up, it's the first time I've been on the air.
that's a market problem, not a baseball problem. And if you look at the Colorado Rockies, they do the same thing and they don't care, but they turned a great stadium into an open bar that draws 40,000 people a game. And the people go to drink and party and they don't care about what's going on the field.
Baltimore is a different market to get people, white
Yes,
people,
exactly.
Republicans from the county into the city.
It's a different market.
It is
Thank
totally.
you. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
And I think it's a
And
different
all this
market in
fooling
thinking
around.
where the money is going to come from to get them to 200 million on a payroll, local revenue, where we,
Money is
all the
going
things
to
Dick
come.
Cass would say to me, we don't have Fortune 500 companies, all the things that Angelo said presciently about, like, if I give DC away, the next generation won't have DC, and all that money that's floating in from Fairfax and Reston and the D that's going to be gone forever for the next people. He really was right about that, because everything we're going to talk about moving forward is how they create revenue.
Like the Nationals are doing great guns too, right?
Well, that's what Peter said. He said neither one would do great guns. That was what he said that was so smart.
But the Nationals are not. their attendance and their revenue is way down because of the shit team they put on the field.
Right.
So he's wrong. And what you know, like the Giants might have argued in the 1970s about the Bay Area being able to accommodate only one team, so you got to get rid of the A's. That didn't come to pass because there were years where both teams were pretty successful and drew over 2 million people. And the Giants did it by building their own ballpark, but they did it even at Candlestick with teams that were successful. And the A's at the Coliseum, that old dreaded Coliseum, when they put decent teams on the field, and they weren't doing the same thing that you're saying people in Baltimore dread because they didn't want to put the money into ownership anymore. And they wound up losing the team because nobody would come to the Coliseum anymore. But it wasn't because of the market. It's
Hey,
the
I
fourth.
remember my dad quit on the Colts, and then the Colts were gone. So, I mean, Barry Bloom is here. He covers baseball. Last thing for you, just on the revenue side for the Orioles, in our argument about this, is just I live here, and I know what people are willing to spend for things. It's not a New York ticket, a ticket item. And I know the Ollie's Bargain Basement nights here that were $5 would bring them out. I know the college night brought out all the young people as well as the police IDing people because kids were drinking. Like all of the things that they've tried to do here. I've watched it all for 35 years and opined on it for better or worse. I wish it were better. Some years it's been better. When Buck was here, it was better, for sure. And winning is better, but I still think the revenue part of this and who these humans are that are going to come down and give $20 for beer and buy the fan club and buy the whatever the television package is going to be and really get into the soap opera of it beyond bobbleheads behind like free stuff that they give away. Because when they give stuff away, people will come. But that's sort of the model right now. And Katie Griggs is understanding that. I don't know where their growth comes from in the marketplace without Pete Alonso being a good guy and a great player, and without Gunnar Henderson and with Rutt Rutschman bouncing back, all of these positive things. And Barry, I'm telling you, in the last 10 weeks, they have shown themselves that you're right. Angelos is dead. This is they're doing things they've never done around here in all of these years. I will tell Katie Griggs that when I see her Thursday morning, because having the Pete Alonso press conference here and Burrow sitting up there, I haven't witnessed that since maybe Albert Bell, right? You know what I mean? Where they went out and spent money and Tejada. I mean, we're going back 23 years here. I mean, we're going back a long time. So for me to see this offseason, there is without question more enthusiasm that Rodgers is going to be a good pitch. All the baseball stuff we were talking about on the field, that Boz signing the pitchers, whether they're going to do more or not. And everybody here wants them to get one more pitcher, one more pitcher. There is enthusiasm here, but I don't know that anybody's reached for their wallet yet. And that's where I would talk to Katie Griggs on the business side and say, okay, so you win. Now, what are you charging people? What kind of experience are you giving? How are you washing Angelos away for the next time I go back to the ballpark? Because I'll promise you, Barry, when they're in last place last year again and nobody's at the ballpark again, it wasn't like Angelos was dead. It was like, dude made a bobblehead of himself and gave it away in April. The team's in last place and they've dealt everybody off. And when does Lamar play? Because that's the way it works. I want to see them thrive. I told Mark Fine that. I will tell Katie Griggs that. I told her that in a letter, publicly, privately. I need them to thrive. They're important here. And this has been the first time in a long time that I can tell you that the temperature is up for them, even if people don't have aren't calling the 800 number, giving their credit card just yet, but I think they're willing to, and I think they're willing to become big fans of Pete Alonso if he continues to perform and be a good guy. He seemed like a great
What's the question here?
that kind of human they couldn't get to sign here before.
What is the question? You just went off into a diatribe. What's the question?
The question is, what's the next thing they need to do to make their pitching better so that they absolutely make the playoffs this year and don't have what they had happen last year? I think they got the right manager, by the way, too. That helps.
The whole thing is that you ask her the same analytics that they use for baseball. They use on the business side to answer all those questions. They look at the market and they determine what they can charge for a ticket, a piece of a memorabilia, a hot dog, everything to bring make it equitable for people in your market to come to the ballpark. They're doing that. I guarantee you they're
I've
doing it.
seen the research. I mean, I'm on their mailing list as a fan. They sent me, give us
But
feedback, give us feedback, for sure.
the research isn't coming from just, like surveys. They have like, they put it into a computer, just like they do with baseball operations on how to build a team. Now, the problem with last year's team was when they built it, the season started and the team broke down and they had multiple injuries. And by the time May came around, they were in too deep a hole to get out of it. Now, Elias, when I talked to him at midseason, he said he was going to do what he did this offseason. He said there was plenty of money from the ownership to let them do what they needed to do to build a team. Now, diverging for a second, for the life of me, I don't understand why Steve Cohen would allow Pete Alonso to walk to the Baltimore Orioles. This guy is not only a great player, not only a great clubhouse guy, not only a slugger who hits home runs and drives in runs, and last year batting average was way up, but he's a huge contributor to the community. And since his whole career started, he's taken money like his home run derby earnings and put it into his charities to benefit first responders and second responders all over New York and all over Florida. Here's a guy who had to rebuild his home in the offseason last year in Tampa area because it was wiped out by the hurricanes. I mean, this is a high quality individual who the fans in New York loved. And they make the calculation that they're not winning with them. The fans are going to come to the ballpark in New York anyway. The people who loved Alonso, they're still going to sell tickets at Citi Field. And we can replace him and try and build a team that has a chance to win because we didn't even make the playoffs with him last year. So the Orioles are a completely different thing. And you will find that Alonso, as a building part for a franchise like Baltimore, is going to be an outstanding add to the whole environment, much like the homegrown, Cal Ripken was many years ago. A high quality individual who is an all-star every year and can play.
Rubinstein compared him to Frank Robinson in 66. So there's a little ways to go on that. And I will say this for the Orioles and for enthusiasm, since we're in the enthusiasm business for them, the emergence of Rodgers and Elias not being the village idiot for having the kid hit 30 home runs and be an all-star that he was dealt off for, that he came on and that Bradish came back and looked as healthy as he did. To me, that's where the hope for the franchise is. It's not necessarily that Rutschman will hit the ball better or that Henderson will bounce back and have more of an all-star caliber year or that Westberg would stay healthy. I'll hear, or that Holiday would progress. I'll hear all of that. I mean, on a regular baseball continuum, I think all that can happen. I was far more concerned about the pitching at the All-Star break last year when it's like pitching costs money. If they would have given Burns the money, his arm fell off anyway, all of that. But the two pitchers emerging very quietly at the end of the year last year around here because they were in last place, football had started, people weren't watching them. But that top of the rotation, the ability for both of those guys to, in my old guy vernacular, 20 game winner potential, three ERA, 20 game potential, make 32 starts kind of guys. To have that on the front to feel like you have horses, that's certainly something you and I were not talking about even in August of last year, to think that the body of work would sustain itself to say, well, that's two things that in my mind they're not worried about right now, which is number two, number three starter, number three, number four, wherever you want to put it. They've got starters. They signed Eflin. They got Boz. I am, as much as you think I'm down on them, I'm not. I'm up on them. I'm down on what they've done in the community so far for the new owners and the new face of the community because it hasn't smelled great yet. I'm waiting for that. Spending money is the first part of it because you think, and everybody says, when they win, people will come back. All right, then go win. That's how I feel about it. They're on the road to doing that. They've bought my confidence that I think. When I have you on the show in August, it won't be because they're selling off half the team.
Okay, that's not, and the point of the matter is here that the Orioles, like the Diamondbacks, like the Giants at this point, who is a big market team, they're competing in divisions like the NL West, I don't know that there's anything the Diamondbacks or the Padres and the Giants could do at this date to compete with the monster that the Dodgers have built. And to that, and to the same degree, as I said to you at the outset of the show, the Orioles have their hands full competing with those top three teams in the AL East. Those are the two best divisions in Major League Baseball by far. And so, you're dealing with teams with big markets, big money, big revenue from all sides, from television, from their ballparks, locally, what they do in the communities. And the Blue Jays have just, except for re-signing Bo Bichette, which they haven't done yet, they've really built on what they did last year. And they play a brand of baseball. Their contact hitting baseball is so much of the antithesis of what's going on in the rest of the baseball, in rest of baseball, that they're not going to be easy to catch up with because they don't strike out. They put runners on base. The home run is an ancillary item to what everything else they do. And yeah, they can hit them, but that's not the game. And their pitching staff is terrific. So it's like they are the team to beat in the American League, much like the Dodgers are the team to beat in the National League. And so the Orioles, you have to be content with the fact that there are three wild card spots in each league. You have to play good enough baseball, win 85 to 90 games to get into the playoffs. And once you get into the playoffs, like the Diamondbacks 3 years ago when they went to the World Series against Texas, good things can really happen because you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. And to that point, I would say the Dodgers got lucky last year because they didn't have much of a bullpen. And so when they went into the playoffs, the Diamondbacks missed by two or three games. They got the Cincinnati Reds and they had to play a wild card round at home. They were thanking the baseball gods that it wasn't the Diamondbacks who were going to come in there and have to play them because the Diamondbacks know how to beat them. The Cincinnati Reds playing them were an afterthought. This is where things all meet. So the Diamondbacks have to improve just a little bit to get back into that playoff round. And then when you get into it, the home field advantage doesn't matter in the first round of the playoffs. You just go in and you win. And so if the Orioles do that, that's what you have to be content with. Get in, get a good matchup in the first round, win that first round, get to the second round, and as you're starting to play against the better teams, then catch lightning in a bottle and hope that there's injuries on those teams. You just don't know what you're going to get against them at any time of year. But, I've told my buddy Randy Levine, who's the president of the Yankees, I've written this ad infinitum that if the Yankees, they can sign whoever they want. But if the Yankees do not change their style of play from the 3-2 outcomes, three true outcomes, home runs, strikeouts, and walks, and start playing contact baseball, much like the Blue Jays, they are not going to take the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays beat them 11 times last year, including the playoffs. That was the difference in their entire season, and both teams finished with 94 wins. So if the Yankees don't change their style of play, they're not going to be competitive with the Blue Jays. They're going to lose to the Blue Jays again. And that's where the Orioles are. So you have to be content with them building a good enough team to win 85 to 90 games, get into the playoffs, and then see if lightning in a bottle hits.
Well, if nothing else, I feel optimistic that they're going to have a better year this year and a better chance. But I will say the weirdest thing is you and I talking about the Blue Jays in real terms, because it gives me sort of PTSD from 89 and 92 and 93 in the early days and Joe Carter and all that stuff. But I was in Toronto last year on opening day, and I had you on the show last March. Nobody was talking about the Blue Jays in any sort of, incredible way. Certainly on opening day, the Orioles kicked their ass on opening day, hit like four or five home runs, like all that. And there was no thought that the Blue Jays would be this toast of baseball in the way they are, or their own country, or Geddy Lee, for crying out loud, or coming close last year. But I'm with you. The one thing that I noticed in the summer was, oh, Toronto and Canada and the Blue Jays have gotten serious about this, and now we worried about the Yankees and the Red Sox and the evil empire for 30 years. Blue Jays are in on it big time again, and it didn't feel that way a year ago right now, and that's how quickly it can happen. And to your point, if all these guys mesh and the star power comes out and people hate the Ravens and give all their money to the Orioles, 2 years from now, the Orioles play some playoff games, win some playoff games. Maybe the Orioles are the ones that wake up and have 32,000 in their ballpark every night, all the time, because they've managed it better. And I'm pulling for that. I believe me, I sit here every day pulling for that. So, and I feel like they've been closer during the Buck Showalter era of having the players before the Chris Davis problems and Adam Jones era. But they're onto this right now. They're in a good spot, not a great spot, but a better spot than they were last summer for sure. And there is enthusiasm here for it, which is why I talked to you. Barry Bloom is here. Your Padre book, it could have come out this year, you think?
Next year.
Next year. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I love the Padres. So anything you write about Tony Gwynn, something I want to read. Always a pleasure. And, you know, we're this close. Spring training. Pitchers and catchers reporting in a couple of weeks. It's baseball season around here. We're going to hire a football coach, though, Barry, and I'll get back to you on the baseball thing. All right.
Sounds good.
Appreciate you. Barry Bloom, my dude. I've been reading him since I was a young man, and I always learn something, especially when he scolds me and gets angry at me. Peter Angelos is still dead, and Pete Alonso is still an Oriole. I'm Nestor. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.